Do you not have a memory? Oh, man. I still have my memory palace.
I have not put in the effort to lay the foundation.
It's friggin' weird. Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And we are a bunch of pedants.
Oh, God, yes.
We're so pedantic. Not pedestrian. Not pederasts, thankfully, but...
No.
Pedestrian. Well, you're pedestrian in a physical sense, and I'm usually pedestrian in, like, I'm a very boring, like, predictable... Follow the same route.
Yep.
I tend to think of Moby Dick as a story about a whale and not a metaphor.
Good.
That's not true. I haven't read Moby Dick. So.
No, I have. It's really good. I read it while sleeping on the street in London and getting my GED.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time. But no, today's podcast is about pedantry, which is over-explaining and explaining when explaining is unnecessary.
Or essentially being an insufferable jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had planned an icebreaker, which was, think of a time when each of us has been pedantic, and neither of us could think of one.
Yeah. Not because we are not. Because
we
have
totally effing are.
We are.
I have been called on it. Yeah. I have been called on it years after the fact and been like, yep. I am a shameful pedant because when I am called on it, I attempt not to double down anymore.
Yeah.
I definitely spent a long time doubling down. But I think, like, part of being a pedant and being pedantic is lacking the self-awareness to know that you're being pedantic.
Yeah.
When you think about it, you're like, oh, I can't really think of a time. Everyone you know can think of a time.
Yeah. The closest we can come, I'll quickly tell this. Because I caught myself midway, so I suppose it doesn't count. But Jim was explaining a science fiction storyline where lots and lots and lots and lots of planets were being destroyed by an enemy force. And he kept making a reference to, like, you killed billions of people. And because there was lots and lots and lots and lots of planets, I'm like, wow, it's gotta be more than a billion, like a trillion.
Actually, it's probably more like a trillion.
But before I started that sentence, I'm like, well... No, like, yeah, I'm going to be pedantic when I say this, but, like, it's probably more, like, it's like a Doctor Who, like, billions and billions, but, so, I mean, that's an example only because it just happened when we were doing the pre-show.
Tonight, while we're doing a show on pedantry.
But it's not really a meaningful example.
To be fair, I mean, the example where I explained to you what pedantry was repeatedly is also an example of that.
Yeah.
So what is pedantry?
Yeah. There's lots of examples of it. I mean, like, colloquially we refer to, like, grammar Nazis that way. Somebody who's really picky about correcting grammar.
I'm really suspicious of anybody who self-identifies as any kind of Nazi.
Yeah.
No. Even in jest.
Yeah. But there's also people who are pedantic about, correcting facts or habits.
Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Yeah, like, you have... You know, actually, you have some bad habits, and I feel like they could be better, and I feel like I could tell you how.
Yeah.
Ryan, your grocery shopping habits.
Yeah.
I don't want to be mean when I say this, but I think that you could improve your... I have a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
About how you could improve those habits. Yeah,
it's cool, Jim. I understand. I pick up as you're dropping down, but see, like, the real thing you need to do is you need to have a list, and you need to mentally visit your grocery store.
You must walk its aisles
before, because that's the only way that you're ever going to be able to do it. And, like, let's just be real. The goal is to save money. The goal is to not spend stuff on frivolous stuff. So, I mean, really, I mean. That's the way you do it.
It's pedantry. We talked about it in the pre-show as the person who takes on the role of being your teacher when you never enrolled in the class.
Yeah.
Like, they have decided that you are about to learn something, and they are going to tell you what it is. It is the conversational refuge of narcissists.
Yeah, offering advice when it was never even asked, never solicited. It's basically like officious meddling, you know. I remember that was a term that I came up with that I came across in my thesis writing about, like, bystanders versus a person who just goes around correcting and helping and, like, oh, you shouldn't do that because it's dangerous. You know, that kind of stuff. So seemed appropriate when we were doing the pre-show notes.
There's meddling is certainly a thing that's involved. And everybody knows that I would go actually further. I would go further than everyone knows somebody who's pedantic. I would say that everyone is pedantic at times.
Yeah.
And the question is, I think the thing that makes you a pedant is, what do you do when confronted with that? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, my reaction as someone who does not wish to be a pedant, but is sometimes, often, is to feel immediately ashamed or attempt to catch myself before I get in there. And I'll have any time I have a sentence that would start with "well, actually," I begin to throw it out before I can say it, because it probably is better off in the garbage. Mm-hmm. But a real pedant will either explain to you why what they're explaining is actually relevant, or explain to you why pedantry is not actually bad.
Yeah,
and it is bad.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the big thing when it comes to... There's a time and a place where focusing on the details or, like, really honing them can be a good thing. Like, we were discussing that in the pre-show. If you're planning a party, as we were saying, like, really deep philosophical conversation, like, trying to define terms or anything like that. Like, there's... It all depends on what the point of the conversation is, because if the purpose of it is, like, discovery, clarification, where two people are willingly engaging, or two or more people, I should say, are willingly engaging in that style thing, like, it seems appropriate there that you would want to, like, hone in on those details and really, really knock it out. As opposed to, like, I'm telling you about me going to the grocery store and you just butt in, you know, and correct me on all sorts of stuff that I'm saying.
With my varying grocery store strategies.
Yeah.
Now, I think the thing that makes pedantry different from detail-oriented conversation is pedantry is invariably irrelevant details.
Yeah.
It is details that... and it isn't a thing that adds to discussion so much as derails it. I mean, pedantry... not all pedantry is derailing... But all derailing... Well, no, there's lots of derailing that isn't pedantry either. Mm-hmm. Ad hominem attacks, personal attacks are a form of derailing. But they're not pedantic.
Yeah.
They're just straightforwardly shitheaded.
Yeah. Being a pedant... I don't know why I'm having... I think it's starting to get late. Usually focuses on details that kind of misses the point of the greater conversation.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm just restating what derailing is, but... In effect, pauses like the what you're trying to in good faith trying to discuss or whatever the point of it is, and it draws attention to something that my favorite example that you give is somebody who's really pedantic about grammar, because most of the time, as you stated it, when you're being pedantic about grammar, you already understood the content of what the person was trying to say, and so focusing on the presentation of it. When the communication or when the idea has been transmitted from one person to the next just seems like an unnecessary thing to focus on.
You have to deliberately ignore what that person is saying.
Yeah.
And focus on the context. But I mean, it also like it happens in the cry of misandry or what about men's rights is a thing that, you know, or even in cases of you know, legitimate men's issues. It comes up in contexts of feminism and women's issues. It's like, okay, there is a place to talk about, you know, issues of suicide and things like that among men. That place is not right now in this space. Like that, the thing with pedantry is it tries to pull that conversation and make it about what you want it to be about. And that is part of, I think, the essential bit of pedants. It is the retreat of narcissists. But grammar is probably the most straightforward example. And what, it is bad.
Yeah, or I was just going to quickly add before we continue on. Or the other function, other than to draw attention to something you want to talk about, is ultimately to discredit or put the other person down.
Yeah. Like that's, well, actually means I'm about to tell you the truth. This other person is wrong.
Yeah. And let me tell you why you're stupid kind of deal. So yeah. I just wanted to throw that in there before we continue along this path.
Yeah. I mean, but the example of grammar is probably the easiest one to understand, the easiest one. And it's the thing that you see everywhere on the internet.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about being a grammar Nazi is if you are being a grammar Nazi on the internet, if you are, let's stop using the term Nazi to describe people. If you are policing people's grammar on the internet, or in real life, for that matter, not only are you being a jerk, you're being a racist. There's only about, 500 million native English speakers in the world? And there are vastly more than 500 million people on the internet. So odds are really good that the person you're policing doesn't speak English as a first language, and you're using that as a reason to exclude them from a conversation, which is a super shitty thing to do. It's xenophobic, it's colonial, because it's based on the sort of the expectation that everyone should speak English, not just speak English, but speak English in the way that you would like them to speak English. I hang out with a bunch of writers on the internet, and so I know a lot of people who are avowed grammar pedants, and it annoys me to no end. Because I wrote a blog post, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, about how I don't give a fuck about people's grammar anymore. I just have more important things to worry about. Like, what are they saying? And is it ambiguous? And how do I understand them? And are they being an asshole? Which, if you read most internet comments, the answer is they're saying something reasonably unimportant. Maybe I understand them, and yes. So, I mean, that's one example. It also derails important discussions. Everybody who's been to university and taken a humanities course has had that guy in the second row who raises their hand for everything and derails a whole class. If you haven't, you're it. I know, because that man was me. I imagine that man was also you.
Yeah, there was a few times. It wasn't a regular occurrence. There was a few times I remember asking questions that in retrospect was unnecessary to ask, especially in front of the entire class.
I remember I got schooled on it super early. I did not necessarily always learn from that lesson. But I was in my third class of critical thinking, and I'd just taken intro to philosophy, and this is like my third university course ever. And I thought I was so fucking smart. And we're learning about conditional statements and inductive logic. And I'm like, shoot my hand up in the air. I'm like, what about Hume's problem of induction? Doesn't this run counter to that? And at the front of the class was now Dr. Corey Mulvihill, who's the big dude who gave zero fucks. And he was like, sure, next. Like, completely dismissed me. And I was really mad about that for about 5 seconds. And it took me maybe 6 months to realize why that question was completely irrelevant.
So you pretty much Judy'd it.
Yes. Only weirder. And I didn't immediately double down on it, nor did I deliberately insult anyone.
Yeah, the first example I can think of where I did something like that was in my intro philosophy class with James Van Evra when he was still around.
Oh, man.
And I think it was like the end of the first class or maybe. I put up my hand. I was sitting in the back, so it wasn't like the second
row. The cool kids.
Yeah, I was sitting in the back, and I questioned I made some reference. Like, our textbook was Classics of Western Philosophy, 6th edition.
I have that one.
By Kahn. Mm-hmm. Kahn, I think, is the editor. Mm-hmm. James Kahn? Anyways.
No, Stephen.
Stephen Kahn. And
why do I know that?
Because we've stared at it too many times. I just remember Kahn. And I question why there was no Eastern philosophy in the textbook.
That's a reasonable question.
It's a reasonable question, but it's only reasonable as a person who'd never been exposed to Western philosophy at all. The closest I had come to Western philosophy was Socrates Johnson from the Bill and Ted movie. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So I questioned the textbook because it was like Classics of Western Philosophy. It's like, what about Eastern philosophy? Not really understanding like anything about philosophy. Listen,
Ryan, you need to understand something about the Classics of Western Philosophy. All right, first off, there are no philosophers south of the Mediterranean.
Correct.
Ever.
They sometimes visit Northern Africa, but that's only in exile.
Yeah. Yeah. And so maybe sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
Even then, there's no philosophers east of Germany. Maybe east of Austria. Maybe Czech Republic. But there's definitely no philosophers from Russia at all. There aren't any in that book, let me tell you. I read that sucker cover to cover.
Also,
let me explain Western philosophy to you here in our podcast about pedantry. Because the other thing is, there are very few women who do philosophy, basically almost none.
Yeah.
You will find a brief work by Simone de Beauvoir. Apart from Simone de Beauvoir...
Or Hilary Putnam.
Hilary Putnam is a man. Ryan,
I'm glad I can control you on that one.
And but apart from Simone de Beauvoir, nothing interesting in philosophy has happened in France for the last 100 years. Mm. The last interesting French philosopher was René Descartes. And that's all you need to know about classics of Western philosophy.
No, because the last 100 years of philosophy in France is all French-smoking nihilists who gave up during the war. We all know that.
Oh, man. But, so, why is pedantry bad? To get back on the topic, pedantry is bad because it derails things, like this podcast, where I just took 5 minutes to explain to Ryan the details of Western philosophy, in quotes, and it's abbreviated in vaguely misogynist history and teaching. But it is one of those things where it distracts everyone from the convenient point and forces everyone to deal with you until such a time as you have been dealt with. Mm-hmm. And then things can move on again. Mm-hmm. And pedants are naturally hard to deal with. Mm-hmm. And... In lots of conversations about, particularly you see pedantry and derailing in conversations around social justice and oppression, mm-hmm. and you're essentially taking people who are already struggling and who are having conversations about those struggles and being like, okay, struggle for me, mm-hmm. which is a shitty thing to do. One of the questions we came up with was, what is the difference between pedantry and calling out or calling in?
Yeah, because I mean, there seems like there are cases where you, and I think we talked a little bit about it earlier, where you would want to focus on getting a particular thing right. And a lot of the cases where it was good to be a pedant was largely around like, whether or not you were morally right about something. Mm-hmm. So, like, well, I'll let you tell the story, but the powwow example.
Oh, yeah.
Or the guru example.
This morning, somebody at work mentioned that we should have a powwow. And a powwow is racist. Mm. It is an appropriate...
Not the powwow itself.
No, but
the use...
white people using the term powwow is racist. It's an appropriated term. It's like saying... you know, let's get together and have a Christmas.
Yeah.
Except even comparing it to something like Christmas misses out on a lot of cultural nuance.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, and we had a brief conversation about why powwow is racist before moving onward. But I mean, because, and sadly, the guru thing, which also happened today, someone referred to me as a guru, which is also racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't call them out on it, and I should have. But they are in a position of more authority than me, and I hesitated when I should not have. But there, you know, it's that notion of when you explain something like that, when you explain that something is racist or misogynist, or when you call someone out for that kind of behavior, and you explain it, is it pedantic? And I think, sort of upon further reflection, the answer is, it certainly could be,
mm-hmm.
but on the face of things, it is not.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that one of the things we talked about with pedantry is it doesn't add anything to the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to say that calling out even like racist language, even casually racist language, I mean we're not using slurs, we're just appropriating terms, which is somehow milder.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a road I particularly want to go down after having said it out loud. But if we want to refer to acts of calling that out as pedantry, we have to own that those things are pointless details. That the act of calling out and explaining that stuff is even if it derails, like even if it moves discussion, the act of it is sort of it adds nothing and is pointless. And in doing so, I think it delegitimizes a lot of those struggles.
Yeah,
in a way that really, upon reflection, bugs me.
Well, and I think we'd have to make one, or we have to at least voice one distinction that when you are a typical, not you, but when a person is doing a typical pedantic kind of pointing out things, it's immaterial to the conversation at hand. There is, on a surface level, an irrelevance to pointing out that powwow is the wrong use of the word because you still understood what the person was saying.
My problem is not that I did not understand them.
And that's where I'm saying that we need to clarify this point that one is not like the other.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so, okay, anyways, continue on.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, that the problem is not that they're using powwow wrong. The problem is that they're using powwow at all.
Yeah.
Which is a term that is appropriated.
Yeah. It's almost like it spurs on a relevant side conversation that just closes the loop. But
yeah.
It's relevant to the conversation because it was inspired by the conversation, but it's not something that... Yeah.
Yeah, I think the issue with... And this is a thing that comes up in discussions of language, and especially in discussions of language and social justice. Because language is one of those things that people play fast and loose with, is, you know, or you see the same thing in not just in inappropriated terms, but in defining things as normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, normal women. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, that is a phrase that excludes trans women.
Mm-hmm.
So. It comes up in use of language, and the question that is asked is sort of what is the point, and is it language policing? And the answer is yeah, but it is language policing with a point. It is with the point of requiring people to grapple with privilege and grapple with their complicity in oppression,
mm-hmm.
and to say that that is not worthwhile is to undermine that struggle.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a whole separate video on this that someone else has already done about pedantry and social justice.
Which, by the way, I mean, I don't know of any of these videos, and I'm certainly not qualified to be able to pontificate on it. But if you know that, if that video does exist, link it to us, and we will definitely
put it in the show notes. Would love to see it, and I will probably look for it and try and put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And if not, I might make it myself.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable in having that conference. I don't. I'm not qualified to talk about it.
This is what makes me a social justice warrior, Ryan, and you just a social justice corporal.
I thought you were going to say social justice asshole, but...
No. We'll talk about that in our inevitable social justice warrior podcast.
Yeah, that is coming.
But it is one of those things that I think that pedantry when it relates to calling people out or calling people in, and it is a form of behavior correction. Mm-hmm. But unlike your grocery shopping habits, mm-hmm. your grocery shopping habits are irrelevant to me. Mm-hmm. Your participation in systemic racism is not irrelevant to me. Mm-hmm. You are a person I care about, mm-hmm. and I don't want you to participate in systems of oppression, mm-hmm. even if they benefit you and make you feel cool. Mm-hmm. In fact, if they do, I double don't want you to participate in them. We will find other ways to make you feel cool, my friend. We will imagine mammoth grocery stores that you can journey through in your thoughts.
Maybe that's where my mind palace is going to be.
Your grocery store?
Yeah, maybe.
It's worse ideas. Yeah. So, how not to be a pedant?
Yeah.
This is not a thing that we're super good at giving advice on, because on account of us explaining to you how not to be a pedant is probably pedantic in and of itself.
Yeah. I think the big question in how not to be a pedant is just to... I mean, you'd have to almost train yourself to do it, but before jumping in and correcting other people, just asking yourself the honest question of to what aim is what I'm about to say mm-hmm. going towards, and does it contribute meaningfully to the conversation? Am I adding to the conversation, or am I diverting the conversation? And I mean, I guess if you're unsure about it, just ask it in a nice way that doesn't insult another person.
Asking is rather than interjecting seems like a really good...
Yeah.
Thing to do. My usual... So about 4 years ago in November... No, October. I remember because I was on my way with a friend to volunteer at a thing. And she called me out on interrupting her. I thought about it. And I had, like, in the past 5 minutes, I'd interrupted her, like, 3 times. And it was not... it was just sort of a thing... about my behavior. I get really excited about stuff. I talk and I start talking and everything gets scattered and I interrupt people. And it wasn't a thing I was really aware of. But it was definitely a thing I was doing, and it was obviously a thing that was bothering them. And it made sense. Mm-hmm. And I started to become really conscious of it. And one of the things I've noticed with pedantry is in that habit is if you stop interrupting people, you will become less pedantic because you will think maybe a little bit more. But the general rule is shut the fuck up. Like, as a general sort of rule, because pedantry is the retreat of narcissists. It is, how do I make this conversation about what I want it to be about? Mm-hmm. And... I think that the more I have begun shutting up, the better I have become at not doing that, because I started asking the question, how am I taking up space in this conversation? And how am I taking up room in this dialogue and in this space? Because it is a thing that is worth being conscious of. Whether that space is a decision-making space, whether that space is, you know, a workspace, whether it's, you know, just a regular conversation, is how am I taking up room, and am I sort of conversationally manspreading? Which is a thing that people totally do, and is a thing that I totally do, and I still do it. Like, that's the thing, is I don't know that there's a cure. The other thing to do is don't double down. I think we wrote a blog post a long time ago about doubling down and why it's horrible. But if somebody calls you out on it, just like if you are explaining something, and somebody calls you out on explaining, and you know, if you are taking them to school and they have not enrolled, then own it. Like just own it immediately. And I do this partly because I'm deeply ashamed of being a pedant, but I still can't stop doing it. But I'm repentant, and I am resolved not to double down. And be like, no. Let me explain to you why me explaining to you is relevant. The best example of that, I was at a grad conference, and someone used the term mansplaining in their paper, and someone in the audience asked what mansplaining was, and they explained it, and then that person attempted to explain to them why mansplaining wasn't mansplaining. It was like a golden shining moment of the mansplaining universe. Like, mansplaining stars were in alignment. Mansplaining, by the way, is always pedantry. Full stop. If you are mansplaining to somebody, you are being a pedantic shitfucker. Stop it. Yes, do you have any final thoughts on how not to be a pedantic jerk?
No, I think we've covered all of it. The only thing I perhaps would throw in there was we had the fun example of when pedantry was useful. And that would be like in a filibuster situation where you're just deliberately trying to do anything to stall or derail the conversation to buy time or whatever.
At the same time, like that's an example of pedantry being pragmatically useful.
Yeah.
But then it's interesting to me that doesn't make it good.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily make it right because you're doing it deliberately to stall things. I'm just thinking of like you know, like any political drama that has a storyline of somebody. I can't remember the senator's name, but they had one in the West Wing where he was trying to run up the clock on something. He was just reading like recipe books. And read like
There's
Tale of Two Cities.
It's based on a true story.
Oh, probably
Strom Thurmond.
Yeah,
Senator Strom Thurmond. Infamous old white man, now dead, did a crazy filibuster in his youth. Like he like purposely dehydrated himself for that filibuster, but the legislation was put in place in the American government, at least, that it had to be, you have to always be talking about a thing that is relevant to the legislation at hand, or the speaker can pass it. They can't just pass the legislation, but they can pass this the privilege of speaking to someone else. Which just has refined the art of filibustering. But even then, like we can describe situations in which you know, shooting people with assault rifles is useful. But that doesn't make it fine. Like, we can describe situations where it is pragmatically excellent. But whether we want to be okay with that on the whole is a different story.
I thought that was a fun little aside note that we had came up with that I wanted to put in for posterity. But I think we've more or less covered everything that I had thought about.
Certainly everything I know about, which tells me that there's a wealth of things I don't know about it.
Yeah.
It's the thing, it's really elusive. It's not one of those things that you're aware of, and it's not one of those things I think about nearly enough is sort of how I participate in conversational space. And it makes thinking about it and talking about it really elusive, and even sort of being aware of it doesn't prevent you from doing it. I can definitely think of occasions long after my desire not to be a pedant had entered my awareness that I have explained at length something completely irrelevant to a conversation.
I just always remember, like, if you're going to destroy a bunch of planets, it's going to be more than billions and billions of people.
Fuck. Listen, alright, it was for very good reasons, they were just very unclear.
Billions and billions. A billion billion stars.
Listen. The swarm needed those planets.
Okay.
For reasons.
Anyways.
I'm going to go play StarCraft now.
I'm going to go and read, I think.
All right. We'll see you guys later. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
And we're signing off.
Stay awesome.
I built one years ago, like when I was in the middle of undergrad. Mm-hmm. I read about them because they were the Memory Palace is an old like sophist technique and speechwriter technique.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't write anything down. You would store it all in your physical locations in your memory palace.
Yeah.
And so I spent like weeks sort of building one, and I built it in the only space that I knew really well, which is the university.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is that years later, I can still go there and find stuff. Like I can walk around the university in my head, in the spot of my head that I sort of parceled out for my memory palace, mm-hmm. and still remember stuff mm-hmm. that's in there, but I never use it anymore, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate because apparently it still exists.